Blog Talk Radio.
This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave and ancient land to me. And when then I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand and walk this land with me, and walk this lovely land with me. I know I can be strong.
Good evening and happy Shabbat. It's the conclusion of the celebration of Pesach, Matzah, and Bukurim for us in the Caribbean. It probably is getting nigh on close to being the conclusion for those who live in the eastern seaboard of the United States. For you, still in the land of fruits and nuts, Kirk, you probably have at least a couple of hours to go.
Yeah, we've got yes, indeed.
Yeah, we had matzah again though for dinner tonight prior to the show, just for good measure because, well, frankly, we like it, and we had a Hezekiah Pesach anyway. We did Pesach on Friday evening. And again on Saturday evening, so we did it Hezekiah style.
Good for you.
I didn't want to share this news story last week when it came out. It's just too disgusting. But now that we've finished with the Yahweh's first three celebrations for this year, I want to share the news that came out of New Zealand. A commission in New Zealand found that a quarter of a million children, young people, were physically and sexually abused in New Zealand by faith-based institutions and, of course, overwhelmingly by the Roman Catholic Church. This occurred from the 1960s into the 2000s. The inquiry found that children, some as young as 9 months old,
oh my God,
suffered years of abuse, which included rape and electric shock treatment by staff and psychiatric and state care workers, clergy, and foster guardians. The quote is, "We acknowledge that the systems and culture of the church allowed abuse to occur. These systems and culture failed, and they must change," said Cardinal Drew. I don't know the population of New Zealand, but I do know that it's considerably less than the state of California.
Oh, yes.
And yet a quarter of a million children were sexually and physically abused by the church as young as 9 months old. I want to just say it as flatly as I know how to say it. The Roman Catholic Church and the religion that it spread across the globe by compulsion, is the single most disgusting institution in the history of mankind. God despises it. And if you are a Roman Catholic, shame on you. It is a disgusting institution. God hates it. I hate it. You should hate it. These morons, these despicable individuals should all be locked up from the Pope on down. Hell is too kind a place for where the popes and cardinals and bishops and priests are headed. They deserve far worse. And I hope God sees to it that they endure it.
5 million is the population. That's what that.
5 million? You've got a quarter of a million children abused in a population of 5 million?
Yes, sir.
It's just, how does an institution this reprehensible survive? It survives because the people who call themselves Roman Catholics are as disgusting as their church. Now let me speak to another disgusting religion. I am so sick and tired of receiving absolute rubbish from the conspiratorial wackos that are now on an anti-vax crusade. I mean, they will claim everything from bazillions of miscarriages to there's one congresswoman that says it's the mark of the beast. You take this, man. You've taken the mark of the beast. Good God, it's a vaccine. If you don't want to live, that's your choice. You don't want to be responsible for your own life, go die someplace. See if I care. But because you're unwilling to take it, others will die. And because of your moronic conspiracies, particularly when you associate them in the context of Yahweh's word, you not only destroy your credibility, but all of those that you spend any time around. Go away. Shut up. Oh, the newest conspiracy, QAnon, has the Muslim that killed, 10, 12 people in Boulder, Colorado, that they said it was a false flag. Never happened. Oh, and they can prove it. Yeah, right. God, whatever happened to evidence and reason? Whatever happened to just thinking? Whatever happened to being reasonable, to being rational? What is it with people? Speaking of stupid. The AstraZeneca vaccine, it's my least favorite. Now, my least favorite would be if I would kind of think long and hard before I take the Chinese vaccine. And I'd probably have to think almost as long and hard to take the Russian vaccine. Just because of their efficacy, not because of any other reason. But the next worst on the list is a vaccine that was developed in the U.K. It's developed in the U.K., manufactured in the U.K. It's the Oxford AstraZeneca. It's got Europe all in a tizzy fit. You know, Europe wanted to treat Britain like crap because of Brexit so that no one else would try to leave the European Union. Well, that didn't work out real well for them because the only vaccine developed within Europe is the AstraZeneca vaccine, and it was developed in Oxford, England, and is manufactured in the U.K. But the U.K. is screaming bloody murder that they're not getting enough of those vaccines. And yet the U.K., who developed it, says, hey, wait a minute. We developed it. We're manufacturing it. We're happy to sell it to you, but we're happy to license other people to make it. But we have a responsibility to our own people first, and we don't trust you because you've already gone on record saying that, you know, you need fairness in vaccines, and you, we need to be giving them to the Pakistanians and to the Africans and to everybody else in the world who had nothing to do with developing them, paying for them, or manufacturing them. I mean, yeah, it's a nice thing to do. Once the people that paid for and created the vaccines and manufactured the vaccines have vaccinated a sufficient number of their people to rid their countries of this virus, then it is a noble and appropriate thing to do, to sell at very favorable prices that vaccine to other countries. It's good for everybody.
Sure.
But you don't do it first. It's like the if you're in an airplane that has depressurization, you don't go and put your child's mask
put yours
on because both of you are going to die. Well, you're actually going to die. You're going to fall asleep. But nonetheless. So I am just amazed with our universal stupidity. The biggest problem, though, Kirk, for us is that our economy is so out of whack because we've had morons think that they, your governor is probably the worst of them, Glavin, that they're in a position to somehow manage the economy and decide what's essential and what's not. Tell people when they can go to work and when they can't go to work. You know, it's truly amazing what they claim and they are able to do. And I mean, I frankly cannot even fathom how much damage we've done. Most of it's done through the supply lines, where you know, somebody says that's not an essential business. The whole thing is interrelated, and the combination of that and $10 trillion of spending on coronavirus because you wanted people to be dependent on you, wanted to shut them in. And people are all up in arms with so many mass shootings here in the recent month or so. Well, no wonder. We're social creatures, and yet you're locking
people
up.
We're on lockdown.
You're depriving them of their livelihood. You're controlling every aspect of their lives. You know, people who are on the edge are either killing themselves, drugging themselves into oblivion, or worse. So it's we're in a position where it's only blind faith that keeps our economy going. There is no substance to it anymore. Any thoughts, Kirk?
Yeah, I do, right along that line, because just by way of introduction, you know, we're an empire. I've never looked at it as anything but an empire. And we've, and because I have spent a lot of time reading a lot of history books and studying, it seems to be the one common denominator of an empire that collapses is when they run out of money. That's true of the Ottomans. Is the Roman took a long time, and most of that factor comes from expansion and trying to control areas that is no longer cost effective to do.
Yeah. Right. The Romans are classic case. The Romans stopped making anything. Romans didn't want to work anymore, so they had enslaved peoples work. Well, to have enslaved peoples, you have to have an enormous military. First, you have to constantly go out and enslave more people. People don't like that very much. And the people you have enslaved, they don't like it very much.
They're not productive.
So the slaves inside your country want to rebel. And those countries that you have taken slaves from, they want to go kill you. And after a while, you get to a position where you're not doing anything. You're not making anything. And you can't support the military to impose slavery. And then what?
And Well, that's the whole thing. And then you know, the you can only borrow so much money as countries did. England had problems, and we propped them up because we had the money, and they didn't have any money, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So it just so with that as a backdrop, you start thinking about some news stories, and then where we are. And there were some really interesting stories in the last couple of weeks. There's seven countries, for instance, including Russia and India, that now officially are buying oil with Chinese yuan.
Right.
That's devastating to U.S. dollar, because the only thing that's propping up a U.S. dollar that makes it valuable is nothing behind it.
Right.
Is that they're using you have to buy two things. You have to do. You have to buy your oil in U.S. dollars, so you have to have a supply of U.S. dollars. And of course, the other aspect is if you you would have to. Well, let me see.
Well, the U.S. dollar is the world's primary reserve currency.
Oh, I'm
and
sorry.
Almost all trade between countries is conducted in dollars. However, with the advent of the euro, with the rise of China, and with the beginning of cryptocurrencies, there are now many countries that are doing business using the Chinese yuan or the European Community's euro, our cryptocurrencies, and are no longer trading in dollars. And there's a lot of countries even that buy goods now in the Russian ruble. So, and when we continue to lose and erode our reserve currency status, then no one needs to hold dollars. They don't need to hold dollars. The currency becomes essentially worthless.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry. I had a brain blackout.
Yeah.
But that was exactly it. What most people don't realize is that every time China would buy something from Russia or vice versa, they would have to go through a bank and use it in U.S. dollars. And that's somebody's making money off of that. And they finally say, well, why are we doing this? And they couldn't get out of it, but now they can. And the Turkish central bank kind of collapsed recently, or came very close near collapsing. So there's inflation. And that's a NATO country, so you have to be aware that that's kind of falling apart of the European connection. I understand on the things that.
Yeah, that's a country that's in a free fall right now, and they continue to be in a free fall because they've gone from being a primarily a secular country to a fundamentalist
Islamic
country. And Erdogan is one of the most draconian dictators in the world. And so that is a flashpoint for world war because of what he has done to his country.
Yeah. Well, you've talked a lot about the way the world is lining up, which is like World War One and World War Two as well.
Yes.
Only now we have the China factor, but from the time we've invaded or destroyed the Middle East with our malfeasance, which no one seems to want to admit, but you heard it here. You hear it here, certainly. You've got Russia tied up with China and Iran. They don't need the oil or natural gas. They've got all they need. So they're in good. They're in a powerful position there, and they're not trading with dollars. And then you've got Europe, and America, and we're tied up with the Saudis. And the tragedy of that is, where does that leave Israel?
Yeah.
And that's where the war will come from. That's the way everything lines up. So the last thing, though, that I was thinking about was, Biden and company just gave away $1.9 trillion. And I understand there's another thing for about $3 trillion, or maybe that's just another trillion that comes up to $3 trillion, but I'm not sure. I've read a couple different reports. I haven't been reading the news as good as I should have been, I guess. But inflation, so I look at some numbers on inflation, and in 1980, our budget was $6 billion. And in 2020, $6 billion a year is our debt payment.
Yes.
The U.S. public debt. Now, I wrote this down because I know you've talked about this at great length when we're doing Chatter and Mess shows and so forth. So the U.S. public debt ratio to GDP, a gross domestic product, is currently at the highest in modern history. Historically, in the U.S., when the ratio hit 90%, we suffered extreme inflation. It's not to scare everybody; just be aware. This is what's going on. What did before will do again. We had inflation of anywhere from 6 to 17% annually. If you remember in your history books, 1915 went on for about 2 years, and in 1972 under the Carter administration, if you recall, I lived through that, and we were getting 10% in our bank accounts. But everything was going up. We now, in 2020, according to the government records, are 127.3% of our gross national product. No one has ever survived that, and we'll hit in 2021 well over 140. What can you do?
Nothing. By the way, we have somebody in the chat room that's been listening to the show for quite some time. He calls himself YHWH Soldier. And I'll guarantee he has nothing to do with Iowa. And he is ranting about all kinds of conspiratorial myths about the vaccines. I find it absolutely repulsive. And the one thing that I've asked from the beginning, if you want to pursue conspiracy, get the hell away from here. Go and play with somebody else. Go and make pretend in your own little world. Because your very association is exceedingly disruptive, and it's unbelievably destructive to credibility. I don't want you anywhere near us. Literally, if conspiracy is your religion, and you want to believe that Bill Gates is out trying to poison people, and that pharmaceutical companies, that their whole mythos is let's see how many people we can control with government, and that vaccines are somehow a counterproductive thing as opposed to probably the most beneficial scientific invention in history. Then I do not want to share anything with
space.
I don't spare the space. I don't want to spare the time. I don't want you in my chat room. I just want you to go away. You're disgusting. You're an idiot. I mean, what's next? Chemtrails? What's after that? Building 7 at the World Trade Center? What's after that? False flags? Why don't you go play with, what's the guy's name? Larry, an unpopular truth. Go. You guys belong together. It reminds me of the nutcase that was constantly writing me about how that Trump had this whole army, and he was going to retain power, and he was going to reveal that Biden was in some kind of cahoots with somebody, and that the whole fraud of the election was going to be such that Trump was going to be empowered as the next president. And after 50 different emails, every one of which made these bold claims, and none of it turned out to be true, I wrote him and said, you know, I haven't bothered you on all of this stuff. I just delete it. But now that you have promoted all of this rubbish for all of this time and none of it turned out to be true, what in the hell's wrong with you? You know, it's like, okay, look, I came out with the concerned about a messenger RNA vaccine. Said, "Yo, this is new to science. I'm not certain that you know this is the best thing in the world. I'm not certain. I want my DNA messed with." And so I had to do some research, figure out what it's all about. And one of the things I learned is it doesn't change your DNA. It's a messenger code written into the messenger script of RNA to produce the antibodies. Ah, what a stunningly clever invention. And to, like this congressman in Washington, to claim that this is the mark of the beast and that this is somehow controlling your ability to think or to give the government control of you as opposed to protecting you from a virus? I mean, why don't you think that Pfizer provided Israel with some 6 million, well, I guess it would have to be almost 12 million doses of this vaccine? Because the Israelis kept astonishingly good records and have demonstrated over a very large cross-section of people that if you take the vaccine, you're not going to die of the coronavirus. That you've got a 96% likelihood that you'll never get it, and a 99.9% likelihood that if you do get it, you'll be either asymptomatic or will not have issues with that require hospitalization. You're not going to die. I really like those odds. I really like
this.
You know, God's promise to protect us so that we can share his message is not from our own stupidity. You know, if I don't eat, I'm going to die. If I am so stupid that in the middle of a pandemic, I'm irresponsible enough to say, oh boy, I don't want a vaccine that gives me a 99% better chance of staying around. I better not take that. I want to test God. I want to make God have to work double time to make certain that everybody's hand that I shake, everybody that I meet, is somehow controlled so they don't get coronavirus and they bring it to me. Wow.
I think David took a whole bag full of rocks in when he went up to Goliath in a slingshot. You're supposed to do something.
God.
You have
Wake
to do something.
Up, people. I'm sorry, but that's my point of view. If you're, if this is what you want to do with your life, you go do it, but you go do it someplace else. Don't associate with Yahweh's name. Don't associate yourself with the covenant. Don't associate yourself with anything that I have written. Crawl in a hole. Excuse me, but I despise conspiracy. So does God. And God despises conspiracy for lots of reasons. Most of them evolve from or devolve to the point of blame the Jews. I mean, Christianity is a cult based upon claiming that the Jews killed Jesus. In fact, now that I'm mentioning it, today is what the Christian church calls Good Friday. Well, of course, they don't even have the date right. Pesach was last Friday.
Mm-hmm.
But the hell with them. Getting the date right means nothing. They claim that today is good because, well, this is the day that you have the dead God on a stick, the symbol of their religion. And then they claim that the Jews were the ones that killed him. Since when did Jews participate in crucifixion? Well, they did. I'm sorry. They did participate in crucifixion. They were crucified.
No, the wrong side. Yeah, the other side.
By the Romans. The Jews are experts in crucifixion. It's true. Because it was perpetrated by the Romans. Let's just pretend that these numbskulls with Christianity were somehow right and the Jews killed God. Well, then, good God, we ought to be worshiping the Jews.
Well, they're the new God then.
So the basis of Christianity is that all those promises that God made to Jews that he's going to fulfill through the end of time and that he celebrated through the Jews. As a matter of fact, when God is talking to Pharaoh through Moshe, one of the things he constantly says, and most people want to think about it, everybody wants to say, let my people go. Well, yeah, he said that, let my people go. You know what he said, why I want you to let my people go? So that they can choose of their own free will to work with me. He says, so we can go celebrate a 3 days journey into the place where we can ponder the word. Why does God want them to work with him? why was this going to be a celebration of a 3 days journey into the world, the word? Because the Jews are the medium of Yahweh's communication with us. Had he not freed his people, had they not chosen, at least some of them, to work with him, God would be unknowable, literally unknowable. We wouldn't know his name. We'd know nothing about him. And the only means to develop a relationship with him would be unknown.
Would be lost. Yeah.
Not a single person could be saved. Not one. Death would be the end of life for all of us, with no hope for tomorrow, because all of it was communicated through Jews, Israelites. And yet, these numbskulls of Christians want you to believe that because God was killed by Jews, which is impossible on two fronts, they had no control over life and death in the Roman Republic, and he was, of course, crucified, which was a Roman form of punishment.
Province, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and beyond that, as Hezekiah would say, Chabaouk. Chabaouk would say, Habakkuk would say, God, you can't die. What's wrong with these people? But nonetheless, they claim that God got really pissed off at those Jews for killing him. One thing that I learned, and volume 4 now of Questioning Paul is completed. It's published. It's available at Amazon, so all four volumes are available. Is that I took the most comprehensive review of how the Christian New Testament, beyond just Paul's letters, were written, and the role that Odysseus and both the Iliad and the Odyssey play, the role of the sibling oracles, most particularly Paul's influence over Mark, over Luke, and over the writer under the pseudonym of Matthew, and how those books were all written 1:5, 1:10, 1:20 years after Paul's death, based upon Paul's influence over those individuals. And they read like Paul's letters because they are the gospel according to Paul. And it's all out there for you. So today, you know, we're reconstructing a house here, and our little community won't allow anybody to work on a holiday. So today is a holiday in my community, Good Friday. So no one can work. I was just disgusted. All day it has eaten at me. And, you know, the realization is that Christianity is the most popular cult ever conceived, and it is a death cult that was based upon the conspiracy to blame the Jews.
Well, if I may say, the tragedy of celebrating the crucifixion, it releases the soul. And then you still have sin on the soul and not participating in Matzah. It's the cruelest thing in the history of mankind.
Yes.
Because it wasn't his intent that anyone go to Sheol.
Correct.
So, and there's no other option. No other option. So that's that. You can't get any worse than that teaching.
Well, correct. And that's Pesach without Matzah, but I don't think we have to worry about too many Christians celebrating Pesach without Matzah. They're too enamored with their dead god on a stick. Returning to where we were 2 weeks ago, as we were continuing to consider what transpired immediately outside of the garden, why things devolved so quickly to the point that Yahweh had to do the grand reset and start over with humankind, Adam. With a Nesama. The passage that we read at the end of the show last week is as follows. This is Yahweh speaking to Cain before he became a murderer. He says, if, to the contrary, and based upon the proposition, You act appropriately and are pleasant to be around.
Yathrob.
If you are consistently cheerful and happy and doing what is expected and right, you are pleasing and joyful, reasonable to deal with, you'll find forgiveness and acceptance. Sayeth. Your situation will improve dramatically because you'll be lifted up, supported, and sustained. You will ascend, rising in status. And if you act inappropriately and are miserable to be around, you aren't pleasant, joyful, you continue to be wrong, then the sin of being wrong and going astray is crouching in the doorway. You are just too into yourself. These intense desires and impulses, the overwhelming urge for dominance and yearning for salvation are things you must learn to better explain and govern. You know, the first part of that, Kirk, as I read it, the thing that strikes me is that there is nothing more debilitating than a bad attitude. Nothing more empowering than a good attitude. But a good and bad attitude ought not be defined by our propensity to be accommodating and accepting. For example, I just went on a tirade against conspiracy in our midst. God detests it. I detest what God detests. I've worked too damn hard to share Yahweh's message as accurately and as completely on behalf of his people to see nincompoops undermine it with such rubbish.
Yeah. No, you're totally right.
You read Yahweh's testimony, and there are lots of times where Yahweh says, these people are horrible. I mean, I've been translating the prelude to Passover, and it's God's overt condemnation against Mitzrayim, the crucibles of human oppression.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't like him at all. And he says so. So you can have a good attitude and still expose and condemn corruption. As a matter of fact, if you don't expose and condemn that which is harmful to God's people, then that's really displaying a bad attitude.
Mm-hmm.
So it's important to know, you know, as I've said so many times, hate is a virtue. We just need to know what to hate and how to hate. You don't hate with your fists. You don't. This is Cain's problem. We need to know what to hate. Cain hated all the wrong things. He hated his brother's success. And he hated Yahweh's rebuke when Yahweh's rebuke was in fact designed to instruct him.
Instructional.
Yes. We need to know what to hate, like religion and politics, conspiracy, and how to hate it, which is to use our words, any other weapon. And then the second part of this is the part that we were beginning to discuss as the show came to a close 2 weeks ago. You're way too into yourself. These intense desires and impulses, the overwhelming urge for dominance and the yearning for salvation are things that you must learn to explain and to govern. It is always the odd, there's so many odd things about Christianity, of course. I mean, the very idea that God would die, the curtain call for the Passover lamb, the Babylonian Trinity, contradicting everything God said. We're going to worship on Sunday. Even the notion of worship, a God that would want an inferior being that he created to worship him, isn't worth knowing. But of those, one of the greatest is that they expect God to save them, even though they're unwilling to listen to anything God has to say. They want a God whose name they don't even know to allow them to live eternally with them. They're willing to accept a false God, bow down to a false God. They're willing to make contributions to a church that abuses 250,000 children as young as 9 months old in a country of 5 million, and they expect the God who despises all of that, they'll say, yeah, come on into my home. I really want more of that. What could be better than having someone that abuses my children? And this notion that a God they won't even listen to, a God whose name they cringe when you say it, a God whose teachings they despise, is supposed to save them. I mean, this Cain is for you, Christian. You're way into yourself. It's this idea of I'm going to pray to God, tell God what I want. He doesn't give a rat's patootie. He has no interest in listening to you. He does not care what grade you get on the test, how hard you hit the baseball, or what girl you date. He does not care. And part of the reason he does not care is because you don't care to listen to him. And so you're way too into yourself as opposed to being into what God thinks. You're way too into your salvation as opposed to finding out what is God offering and what is he expecting in return. You know, Pharaoh twice in the prelude to Passover says that, hey, I was wrong. Okay, my bad. Yeah, I was right. I'm wrong. Let's just all get along. Stop, you know, stop the hail. Stop the locust. That's the second time he says, okay. I may have done something at some time that was somewhat incorrect, but only once. It was no big deal. Let's all just get along. I want you to accept me. Literally what he said. Yeah, right, pal.
Nice try.
Oh, yeah, nice try. I don't think so, pal. No. As a matter of fact, in the second place where, you know, it's we all translated God heart, Pharaoh's heart. At this point, there is one place where it does say that he stiffened his judgment. He made his
heart
judgment
heart,
forward.
Yeah.
In this particular one, he just says, no, I honored and rewarded Pharaoh's judgment, is what God told Moses. He says, before you go there, you need to know that I have chosen to honor and reward Pharaoh's motivations and judgment. I gave that dude exactly what he deserved. I think I personally thought it was hilarious. But what do you do? That's a powerful statement. It's something people just read over and probably never think of, but look how much there was for us to learn in that statement. So, as I shared in some of the commentary I wrote on this chapter, it's we ought not seek salvation. We don't preach salvation here, do we? We don't preach, period. But
not at all.
It's
unimportant.
If your goal is to be
come
saved,
with the package.
Why don't you just go away with all the conspiratorial nutcases? God doesn't want to save you. God's not offering to save you. Even the Hebrew word yasha, that is the primary word to be translated save,
freedom,
that's about its fifth meaning.
Yeah.
Its first meaning is to deliver. Second meaning is to free. Third meaning is to liberate. The fourth meaning is to keep from harm's way. It's only saving, not in this eternal sense of, I'm going to save you from your sin so that you can live in heaven and avoid hell. No, it's never useful. Even when it's translated save, it means I'm saving you from man. I'm saving you from religion.
Yeah.
It is the lone prerequisite of the covenant to walk away from human, political, religious, and cultural alliances. It is only then that we can act upon the next three, allowing Yahweh to perfect us, trusting and relying upon him, and doing so by closely examining and carefully considering the conditions of his covenant. The fifth condition is to circumcise our sons, showing that, yeah, we intend to raise our children so they'll choose to separate themselves from the babble of men. Contrary to religious beliefs, God does not want us worshiping. He doesn't want us seeking to placate him. He wants us to rise up, stand up, and become ever more like him by thinking our way to him. I am constantly pondering, what is it about Dode that caused Yahweh to say, I chose him? And then after he says, I chose him, he says, my criterion for evaluating man is different than man's. And so you think about, what do men like when they choose, vote for somebody? Tall, articulate,
handsome,
clever with words, pretty face.
Very rich.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They're rich, powerful.
Charisma.
Yeah. All of the things that man says that is what appeals to people. I mean, for many years, it was your ability to fight was the thing that was the most appealing. That's how you became king. And ultimately, what God says, no, the things that appeal to men about men do not appeal to men. I have a different criterion. So he said he chose Dode. So how was Dode different? Well, one thing about Dode is that he was brilliant. His psalms, his proverbs, they're brilliant. So guy was thoughtful. He was very articulate. He was a superb writer. Maybe the greatest writer of all time. Probably was, I would say, easily the greatest writer of all time. He was a man's man, 8 years old. Hey, kid, would you go grab a rock? You don't need a lot of them here. One will do. This big foul-mouthed jerk over here, this uncircumcised Philistine, he's bugging the people. Let's just take him out, okay?
Okay.
Before he even takes him out, you know, everybody's quivering, and they're both, scared to death of him, and he walks up to him and says, you filthy mouth worm of a man, you uncircumcised Philistine that is out here bad-mouthing my people and my God. Yeah, he gives him lip. And you read Dode's Psalms that Christians are whining, David, he's just complaining about everything. You're damn right. He did not suffer fools well. Somebody was wrong about God, they were Dode's enemy.
Straighten him out.
Yeah, Dode's enemy, Matt. And he gave them both barrels. And he said, hey, God, let me at him. Let's take him down. When it came to protecting God's people, there's only one legitimate reason for violence. Only one. It's the imminent threat to harm of your own family.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Yes.
His family was Israel. He protected Israel from harm. That was it.
And no one disagrees with
that. He was not going off into crusades and halfway around the globe. He was the opposite of Alexander the Great that left Macedonia and never came back. He wasn't protecting Macedonia. Just the opposite.
Hardly.
He was not, Julius Caesar. What did Julius Caesar do? He went off and went into Gaul, into Spain, his name, and then came back with lots of slaves. The next thing he did is, rather than protect Rome, he attacked Rome. These guys, Kublai Khan, Genghis Khan, Tamerlane, they weren't defending Mongolia.
No.
They were out and robbing the world.
Yeah.
And so Dode was unique. An extremely skilled soldier that only fought to defend his people. God liked that.
God called him his shepherd. God likes shepherds. He called Dode his songwriter. He liked songs, like this man's songs for sure. He called him his chosen king for his kingdom forever. So he likes Dode's style of leadership. He made Dode a prophet, so he trusted him with his words. That's the kind of fella we ought to be emulating in our lives if we want to be useful to God, if we want to please God. I cannot imagine Dode in this world today listening to an advocate of conspiracy or politics or of religion, and him just not grabbing a stone, taking that slingshot and say, well, before he flings it, you disgusting, foul-mouthed idiot, take this. God likes that. And keep in mind, Goliath was not out in Philistia, wasn't out shaking in his boots because the Israelites had chased him halfway around the globe. No, he was there.
He was in Yahweh's territory.
Israel. Yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
God is interested in those who stand up, who he wants men to be men and women to be women, and celebrate the differences, but both to be all we can be. In fact, he wants us to be far more than we can be on our own. His whole deal is to lift us up so we're more like him. And when we bow down to him, we're negating everything.
The least like him. Mm-hmm.
Yes. The primary meaning of Yathab in the preceding statement is not to be good and to do good, which is how it is translated, because, of course, the religious want people to do good, which they define as being obedient to them. But it's instead being pleasant, being pleasing, being happy.
Don't worry, be happy.
Right? Yeah. And to be pleasing to whom? God. And since Yahweh has used Tob time and again in this account to convey good, it must be the attitudinal aspects of Yathab that are important.
Agreed.
Yeah. And therein lies the entire purpose of this discussion. Hebel followed Yah's lead, and Cain did not. If you want to be right, learn what God values and what he condemns, and take the same perspective. Take the same approach. You know, one found himself accepted and favorably regarded, and the other was ignored and rejected. Heaven is for those whom God values, and he values those who value him. Kirk, I think that Cain's issues were central to mankind's problems. We are too often led by our emotions rather than our minds. The whole conspiracy thing is that way. Today we have an extraordinarily liberal conspiracy that I think is going to wreak havoc in the world. It's called the cancel culture. Have you heard about the cancel culture? Cancel culture.
No, sir.
Yeah, the cancel culture has grown out of the hysteria of the conspiracy called Black Lives Matter. Black Lives Matter is a conspiracy because it's mostly led by people who have miserable lives, who want to blame others for their failures, when in fact the community is responsible for 93% of its own deaths. So it's a conspiracy. Well, the cancel culture has evolved from that. The cancel culture says that
anything that they think has, even at a distant period of time, could be somehow misconstrued to be offensive to their sensibilities, it must be canceled. So Dr. Seuss, personally, I know some people learn to read by reading much more sophisticated things than this, but as for me, one fish, two fish, red fish, blue fish, hop on pop, yes, oh, the things you can think when only you try. I really like Dr. Seuss. I thought he had a really clever way of words. If you're a cancel culture, you have to cancel Dr. Seuss. You've got to take the books out of your library. Because some of the, you know, red fish, blue fish were being racist.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, I like green eggs and ants. Well, that's pejorative to those who agree. No, seriously. Seriously. And if it almost doesn't matter if, you know, of the world, for example, in terms of slavery. Slavery was pervasive around the world from the beginning of recorded history, when we know it, which would be about 4,000 BCE. I'm sure slavery was pervasive before that, but we just didn't know it because of no recorded history. But slavery was pervasive and has been. Slavery was the economy of Rome. It was the economy of Greece. It was the economy of Egypt. That's why Yah was so opposed to slavery. Slavery was the economy of Babylon and Assyria, Persia, Greece. It was the economy of the Roman Catholic Church, the feudal system of slaves and serfs and lords. As a matter of fact, I did a study the other day on the caste system, because the caste system is a form of segregated slavery. We're at the bottom of the caste system, and every culture and civilization was the slave. Above the slave was an indentured servant. Above them were the farmers, the lowest level of plebeian, and it went up, of course, to the king. And under the king, the king's family, and then either the priests or the military officials, depending on which country you were in, and then you worked on down the chain. And and so I looked at Assyria and Babylon and Sumer, and I looked at Greece and Rome and Egypt. I looked at Carthage. I looked at the Aztecs and the Incas. I looked at the Chinese and the Japanese and the Indians. And guess what I found?
Same thing, I'm sure.
Every one of those cultures had exactly the same caste system. Different names. The most complex of them was the Roman. Oh, man. The Romans had like six different variations of the equestrian class, which is basically a soldier class of whether or not you had armor and weapons and how many arms and weapons that you had at your disposal. And it was like third or fourth down on the pecking order, but way up from slave. So in every culture, the same thing is a segregation of people. And, you know, in the feudal system that was conceived by the Roman Catholic Church and imposed upon Europeans, there was no upward mobility. You were a serf. You had no rights. You worked at the pleasure of the king. And yet, with the slave trade into the Americas being controlled by the crown heads of Europe, and the only people that fought against it were the pirates. The pirate crews were filled with freed slaves, and they actually fought against it. And they fought against people who were working for kings who were universally disgusting. And yet this cancel culture would condemn Americans and say that, you know, if you're Caucasian, you're just wrong.
you're responsible for racism and slavery. It's just part of your nature. But no, it's not.
Question.
And America has to wallow in shame when America was about as responsible for slavery, on the grand scheme of things, nothing compared to Europe. Nothing even compared to South America. The institutions, they're wrong, absolutely. But it was the way of man, which is why God despises the way of man. Yeah, the cancel culture, which is to literally eliminate from society anything that they think is opposed to their agenda. And the first is they would teach children in school that if you are Caucasian, you are automatically a racist. You're guilty. You should be shamed. You should have to apologize. You should have to give up all that you have because you're disgusting.
How do you deal with the Civil War? What was the Northern Army made up of?
Yeah, of course. Oh, by the way, cancel culture that they have a point on Caucasian countries being so bad. Then, there's like 40 countries in Africa.
Yeah.
40? So, African countries, so Southern Africa, not up there in Morocco or Libya or Egypt. They've got their own issues of African cultures. Can you tell me one? Yeah. Tell me one that's thriving, that is free, that is a safe.
Where investors could put their money.
Inventive place to live.
No.
So I want to tell you, if the problem is that the Caucasians have somehow harmed the Africans, why are the African cultures so disgusting? Really, they are. Now, all fairness, it is far more difficult in some environmental areas to thrive. Disease with malaria and things like that is a real problem. So I think that skin color is a meaningless concept, but culture is not.
No.
And the culture is the problem. And the culture in the African countries is horrible. In Republic of South Africa, while apartheid was wrong, what we have now is worse. Elderly Caucasian men and women are burned alive for no other reason than revenge. Zimbabwe has gone from the flower of Africa to a country where death is celebrated. So Cain's issues are central to mankind's problems. That is to say, we should be more interested in thinking our way to intelligent conclusions and being rational than we should be lashing out emotionally, as Cain did. As such, political and religious men coveting sex, power, and money have mercilessly, without constraint, robbed and raped the masses without interruption for 6,000 years. Cain's problem is mankind's problem. Unwilling to listen to God, man's animal nature roars to the forefront, killing all that is good. As had been the case with his mother before him, Cain did not listen. Carried away by cravings and rage, he murdered his brother, Abel, which his mother named Waste of Breath. When Yahweh asked the killer what happened, he answered yet another question with a question. In this way, he reminds us of another who should be questioned. Shaul questioned him, Paul, the founder of the religion most menacing to Jews. This reads, then Cain, Cain means conceived to be possessed, created and acquired, commonly known as Cain, responded, Amar, confronting Hebel. Hebel means a waste of breath, one who lacks value, who is meaningless and futile, useless vapor, commonly called Abel. And additionally, when it came to be that they were in the field, Cain rose up and established himself against his brother Hebel, and he murdered him. Whatever the reason, Cain struck his brother with deadly intent, preferring fists to rhetoric. I find that this is the preferred approach of those who do not think and who do not know what to say. Those who resort to violence do so because they're incapable of responding appropriately. It is the cause of sexual abuse, violent crime, murder, and wars. Have you watched any of or listened to any of the testimony thus far that the prosecution has brought against the officer Chafin? Floyd, George Floyd.
No, sir.
I am so enormously conflicted in this trial because for the past 20 years, I have been screaming at the top of my lungs against police brutality. I've said the police are way out of control. They are way too aggressive. They're way too empowered to eliminate other people's freedoms. They're way too prone to lie, to plant evidence, to not help out when they should be helping out and intervening when they don't belong. Way too heavily armed.
Witness to all of that too.
Yeah, way too heavily armed. There's way too many of them. Way too many different agencies, and they're way too protected in the judicial system. And so I have been opposed to America's army of national soldiers for a very long time, from the FBI on down. And so what happened to George Floyd is testament to police overreacting. And so for that part, you know, throw the book at these officers. But another says that we ought not think that we can be stupid and expect to be treated as if we were not. George Floyd was a convicted felon, not only for drug abuse charges, but most notably for pistol whipping a pregnant woman in her home. This is not a good man. A very bad man. He had a drug problem all of his life. Cocaine, and then he went to fentanyl. Stunningly deadly. Fentanyl is probably what killed him. He was also on methamphetamines, which caused him to be unusually aggressive. The store clerk said, you know, he was barely coherent. So he was driving. He had driven under the influence of those drugs, putting other people at risk. This was not a hero. He tried to pass a counterfeit bill. It's exceedingly disruptive to everyone's currency and the value of their possessions. He was eroding everyone's value by doing that. He then stole the cigarettes. And then when the cops came to deal with him, he resisted arrest, and he was held down. He also had the coronavirus, knew he had it, wasn't wearing a mask. And so when the cops tried to put him in the cop car and he resisted arrest, this was a technique that they opposed. Now, up to that point, he's brought this on himself. And it is likely that the technique that Chafin had used would not have killed
a man that wasn't strung out on fentanyl, hadn't ravaged his body with years and years of drug abuse, that wasn't suffering from corona, and that hadn't tried to resist arrest, he'd still be alive. But nonetheless, he pleaded for his life. He said he couldn't breathe. He said he was going to die. And this cop did nothing. Kept his knee right on his throat. So I'd very much like to see Chapin be an example and suffer for the consequence of what he did. At the same time, I don't like it when somebody who is so corrupt is turned into a hero. The state of Minnesota or the city of Minneapolis, one or the other, gave the family of this nincompoop $12 million. That man's life wasn't worth 25 cents. I'm sorry, but it just wasn't. When you're a drug addict on things like fentanyl, you have decided that your life isn't worth anything. It's not me being pejorative. He made that decision. You're willing to pass counterfeit bills for nicotine and cigarettes. You're saying that your life isn't worth anything. And for them to award him $12 million prior to the jury trial is astounding. So therefore, Yahweh said to Cain, "Where's your brother Hebel?" He answered, I do not know. Am I my brother's observer? Now, I know everyone's used to hearing of my brother's keeper, but Shamar doesn't mean keep.
Shamar, no, to observe.
Responsible for closely examining, carefully considering, the watchman, guardian, and protector. This is the second time that Yahweh has asked about someone's whereabouts. The first time was with Adam. Yeah, hey, Adam, where are you? Yeah. And now Cain about Hebel. An omnipresent, an omniscient God would have known and thus not asked. Well, Yahweh could have easily located both men, one alive, the other dead. The purpose of the question was to demonstrate what should be obvious. Yahweh is set apart. He's special. Thus, he cannot be omnipresent without being everywhere, making him common rather than unique. We can't be set apart from Yahweh if Yahweh's omnipresent.
Very good point. Yeah, exactly.
He would become the creation rather than remain the creator. And he would suffocate those he wanted to love.
Even more important, yeah.
Yeah. Moreover, an all-knowing deity would make a mockery of free will and ruin any hope of the ensuing relationship being interesting. The religious are not very bright because they somehow over thousands of years can't think these very simple concepts through. He said, "What have you done? The voice of your brother's blood is crying out to me from the ground. And so now you're cursed by the ground, which has opened its mouth to receive your brother's blood from your hand. Therefore, indeed, when you work in association with the earth, it shall no longer produce a healthy crop for you. You will constantly be shaken, a staggering nomad, and you will wander away aimlessly like a fugitive throughout the region." Accountability.
Mm-hmm.
It is the essence of morality, of justice and fairness. That's the thing that I keep on trying to harp on, something like Black Lives Matter. Accountability matters. the culture of the community is creating young men that are 800% more violent than any other community. And therefore, 13% of the population is responsible for 93% of black deaths. There's something in the culture that is causing this, and you need to be accountable. Stop blaming someone else.
That's staggering.
Accountability is essential. God is accountable. We ought to be accountable.
Certainly was with Pharaoh. What's the message there?
Yeah. Be accountable. Yeah. That said, the key to understanding this statement for mortal man, separation from God is the penalty for sin and not death. He judged Cain. What was the penalty? Did he kill
you're
Cain?
You're going to be with me.
Nope.
No.
He separated him. You're wandered. Going off over there. You're going to wander around like a nomad. Separation from God is the penalty for sin. That is really, really important, folks, because Pesach, which makes us immortal, all that does is resolve the consequence of our rebellion. Our penalty for being rebellious is to spend eternity separated from God in Sheol, and that is what matzah resolves. That's why Christians are so lost in their celebration of Easter. Cain said to Yahweh, "The consequence of my sin is greater than I can bear. The punishment for my wrongdoing and the guilt is more substantial and severe than I can tolerate or endure. Surely today you have driven me away and banished me from the presence of the ground. And from your presence I shall be concealed and vanish. I will become shaken and staggering like a nomad, and I will wander aimlessly like a fugitive throughout the region." Oh my God, it's going to come to pass that whoever discovers me will seek to kill me. Oh, good. God, stop whining. You just killed your brother. Why are you complaining that somebody might want to kill you after you just killed your brother? If you didn't want to be killed, why did you kill him? You know, it's like the Muslims. They go off griping that they need to go kill Jews because there was some Jew back in some day, they say, that killed a Muslim. Well, good God, your religion was literally started by killing Jews. Killing the men, raping the women, and enslaving the children. What in the world are you doing complaining that maybe someone reciprocated after time? You know, he murders his brother, and that he is now whining that somebody may do the same to him. I interrupted you, Kirk. You had a point?
No, I don't understand why Cain, it never occurred to him to say, you know, you're absolutely right. How can I make this right? Is there a possibility I can make it right? I mean, that would be the thing.
No. Okay. No,
I've really screwed up here.
Okay. All right. When Chawa and Adam screwed up and chomped down on the fruit from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, had they at that point said, "Oh, wait a minute, God, time out. But before you judge us, I remember now. Your instruction was that if we made a habit of eating from this tree, that we would come to resemble that. I set it down. She set it down. In fact, we just tossed it away. Not going to do that again." God would be duty bound to say, "Okay, yeah, that's what I said. we have a deal. Let me explain to you again why what you it's good for you and what's not good for you. And we go on. This is a different story.
Mm-hmm. I know, but still.
You don't undo killing your brother.
I know, but
this is Adam's kid.
Yeah, I know.
And he murdered him. And he not only murdered him, it was premeditated murder out of envy.
There's no hope.
Okay,
yeah,
so
is
God
back, back
has given
attitude.
This whole discussion of you got a crappy attitude? Nobody wants to be around you? You know, shape up.
You're right.
And
you're right.
The first thing he goes off and does is rather than trying to endear himself to his brother and get his attitude right, he goes off and murders him? No, there's no.
Yeah.
Oh, hey, God.
No,
God,
it's no coming back on that. No.
Sorry, God. The rock slipped. Won't do it again.
But you know what he pointed out was father is probably one of the most horrible words I've ever translated. And it's a fence or at least the briar patch letter that separates you from the upright pole, which stands for the message,
mm-hmm.
and being an observant man. It's just three letters. It's like, that is, wow. If he says that in the sentence to you, you're really doomed. I mean, you got no hope at all.
Yeah.
And
yeah, well, speak to kill me.
Yeah, just, wow.
Yeah, any word that has a G in it in Hebrew, you've got it.
That's terrible, too, going backwards. Yeah, you're going backwards.
Yeah, it's the last letter in. And Harag will seek to kill
Harag,
me. The fact of the matter is that a G in Hebrew is a bad letter. That is the letter of Goyim and of Gomorrah. There's not a lot of good things that come out of that.
No, this is just, this horrible words here.
So
you're right.
Well, those of concern to Cain, they're going to kill me, may have been without an Asama. They appear to have had a tit-for-tat moral code with violence breeding retaliation, one in which cold-blooded murderers were punished. This statement, therefore, is one of many which seem to confirm what we have come to know through archaeology is that Homo sapiens existed outside of the garden in large numbers, and they had at least a basis of right and wrong.
They can think.
And you know they communicated with one another. They the first writing systems were just beginning to go out. Man has been around for a long time, and so if you're of the numbskulls that think that Adam and Chawa were the first men, first man and woman, and that they are therefore the forefather of all of us, Homo sapiens, then this makes no sense. Who was afraid was going to kill him?
Yeah.
So they existed outside of the garden. In August of 2007, there was a challenge to the evolutionary tree depicting man evolving from chimp to Homo habilis to Homo erectus and then to Homo sapiens over the course of a million or so years. Turned out not to be true. Homo habilis and Homo erectus, both of which are far more ape than man, lived at the same time. Oops. How can we have evolution if they lived at the same time?
Can I throw something in on that?
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I did a little research in, being like in art, in the grotto in France, the Paleolithic grotto, with all the paintings on it. That's 15, the carbon dating on it was 15 to 17,000 years ago. Plus, so that's predating all that, and that's in Europe. And they weren't there, and the flood didn't touch them. The cave painters drew symbols, symbolic art, so they must have communicated with these symbols as well, so they had to be able to think, and they could understand the events that were depicted on the walls. There was even 60,000 years ago, they carbon dated some similar things in the, interestingly enough, the Iberian Peninsula.
And they could use tools because those images are
either
chiseled into stone or they're chalked with tar or resin in the stone. So they were used.
Yeah, that's sophisticated paint. That's sophisticated paint. When you put in a binder that's permanent, something that would last that long, that's pretty cool. I mean,
that's
this is not amateur watercolors. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So,
the illusion is over.
Right. Eden, the Garden of Eden, existed 6,000 years ago. And the expulsion from it started the march of time to our return to it. But in that period, there were Homo sapiens everywhere. And, you know, it's not only a situation where we found out that Homo habilis and Homo erectus existed at the same time, but so did Homo sapiens and
Homo sapiens, and
Cro-Magnon.
Yes. I heard that,
exist
too.
At the same time.
I heard that, too.
Neanderthal.
Yeah.
So Neanderthals,
the big head,
and Homo sapiens exist at the same time. So we're not evolving one from the other. It's also, we found out that the this notion that all humans evolved from Africa, you know, there was the first one there, and then we all evolved from the ape in Africa. That's not true either.
No, that can't be true.
But the when it's found, it's kind of like the same thing with all the conspiracy people that that write me, when what they claim turns out not to be true. And, you know, with the, I think I didn't finish my point, but one of the advantages of Israel with all of these tests, we know exactly what the vaccine does. We know how many people have headaches after it, how many people have fevers after it, how many people are infected with corona after it, how serious those effects are, how many people are hospitalized that have had two vaccines, and how many have died. And we know, you know, what its effect has been on everything from pregnant women to blood clots. The information is unbelievably prolific and available. And you can read it. It is sad when people promote myths, the evidence proves them wrong, and all they do is dig in. And, you know, that's the same thing here with the scientific community on evolution. The evidence has proven their theory wrong, and yet they just dig in.
Can't give it up.
So then Yahweh said to him, assuredly, anyone who slays Cain will experience sevenfold retribution. So Yahweh placed a sign upon Cain, lest someone who discovered him strike at him. Well, that is a lot of there, man. First of all, it again shows that God isn't going to zap the murderer dead on the spot. You know, where religious would blame God for everything that happened in someone's life. And it's just God said, no, I'm not going to do that. Second thing is that when it comes to life and death decisions, that's God's responsibility, not man's. He's saying, no, if another man chooses to take your life, I'm going to hold them accountable for that. It's not their job. The other is that by putting a sign on Cain, all of those other Homo sapiens out there had to be sophisticated enough, developed enough.
To know what a sign is.
Intelligent enough to know what a sign is. Back to your caves in France.
Yeah.
They had to know. And part of the beauty of this is that if you look at Paleo Hebrew, the oldest form of the alphabet, that alphabet you could read without being naturally literate. You know, the each of the characters pick something. You know, a ram is the protective leader of the flock. Beth, that was ALS. The Beth is a family home. In each of these letters, hey, a person.
Upright man. What a concept.
Yeah, a roach. Yeah, an upright man. Roach is the head of an individual who is looking ahead and hearing, listening, thinking.
Obviously, I mean, using the senses.
Oh, yeah, horizon. Yeah, dawn of a new day. Lamed, a shepherd's staff for protection and rescue and walking and leadership. Every one of these letters.
It's not complicated either.
Doorway,
no.
Right, a doorway. It's
They
all, a fence to separate. Every one of these letters conveyed something. A shin, a teeth were nourishing words. So he came up with a sign that they would understand. So we find additional proof that we're humans, that there were humans around who could read or at the very least had the capacity to interpret a sign. Therefore, while this conversation occurred outside of Eden and just shy of 6,000 years ago, humans have existed far longer. One of Christendom's greatest myths is that Adam was the only man in existence during his stay in Eden. And yet that belief is pulverized by God's word.
Once again.
Yep. Cain went away from the presence of Yahweh, and he settled in the land of Nod, east of Eden. It's interesting. He went east of Eden.
Mm-hmm.
Where did the flood occur?
That was east up north in the by the Lake Van, yes.
Yeah, well, Lake Van is where Eden was. You go
Eden
east
was,
of Lake Van. Guess
you have to go. You have to go towards
Black Sea,
to Babylon, actually.
Right. So everything that came up from that asteroid struck went right up through the Tigris and Euphrates valleys, leaving the sediment and silt from the tsunami, went right up into the Black Sea, which is where the greatest inundation took place, with a 500-foot rise of water, turning it from fresh to salt water and burying those civilizations that rushed out through the Bosphorus Straits. He went east of Eden.
Mm-hmm.
And he went to the land of Nod. Nod means to waver and to be shaken, to lament, wandering away, to complain, to have a grievance, and to bemoan one's plight. So, it's clearly, if it was the land of Nod, the Nodians must have lived there, don't you think? In places are named after people.
Yeah.
Yeah, rocks don't waver.
You know, interesting is,
trees don't
also
lament. It's people.
Yeah.
The land of Nod was the place of people.
There's a word in Hebrew, it's Nodab, and Toda of those people. And in this translated is descendants of Ishmael. So the family trait will continue.
That's funny. So after being banished, Cain can be, he found a woman among the nomads of Nod, and he chose to marry her. It does not say so implicitly, and yet it is implied that the men and women living outside of the garden, they did not possess a neshama conscience. But the offspring of a parent like Cain with a neshama, even though his was not working real well, could be so equipped. It's the only rational conclusion which can be made from the Torah's upcoming justification for the flood, and the archaeological evidence wherein written history dates to this time and this place. And so
while you can look at the cave drawings from 15,000 years ago, you're not going to find the remnants of civilizations like you found, like you find 500 feet beneath the current surface of the Black Sea. Like we find going down the Tigris and Euphrates rivers in Assyria and Babylon and Sumer. So it is. This was the birthplace of civilization. In fact, I was listening to a professor was giving a speech about the rise of civilization and how it manifests itself in various places. And he says, you know, there's this great myth among the scholarly that civilization is the best of man, that we progress and become great through civilization. And he says, I think we're doing hunter-gatherers a great deal of discredit because all of the contrary, that the hunter-gatherers were better people than were the civilized.
Yeah. So, no argument here.
Yes. So it's apparent that the children inherit a nesama from the parents. Because Cain would not have been judged by Yama if he were incapable of knowing right and wrong. So he had an nesama. It's just that he didn't use it very well.
Yeah, I put a big highlight on that one because that's so obvious.
Yeah.
That's well, it's always obvious when you're right, or I look it up. Then you go, duh.
I think it's pretty obvious.
It's a good line.
This point is driven home in the introduction of the fifth chapter of Bereshit, the Genesis, which we'll get into next week. And also, in the conclusion of the flood, Yahweh declares that he achieved his purpose. And his purpose was ridding the region of corrupt souls with a nesama. So if he rid the region of souls with a nesama, then the only reason they would have a nesama in this region is because Cain and the other descendants of Adam and Chawa infiltrated this region. I mean, this is the place, as we will learn, that the sons of God, which would be the descendants of Adam, who was considered God's son, married the women that they felt were beneficial to them, and they conceived children with the nesama, and they became Nephal, very warlike, and political, and militant, and vicious. So, you know, if you look at some of the museums going through time, and what you find is that civilizations rose over other civilizations because they developed better weapons.
Mm-hmm.
And the catalyst of civilization, became weapons and the will to use them. So the development of weapons required, to some degree, the use of an nesama, just using it poorly.
Oh, you got to think. Yeah, think better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So collectively, these insights strongly suggest that the nesama conscience, the seat of judgment, and the nefesh, consciousness, soul, are passed on as part of human conception. The child of a parent with one gets one. So, yeah, sometimes we wonder, are there humans alive today without a nesama? And if so, what is the fate of the soul? Yeah, I think it's possible. We're not told.
Mm-hmm.
That said, if it were true, it would certainly explain some of the thoughtless and horrid behavior that we have seen not only throughout human history, but that we're witnessing today. It would also resolve the disconnect that we see in today's news, where information is plentiful and accessible, and yet people have never been as foolish, as immoral, or hypocritical.
I can't tell you how many people have said that to me in the last few months. in conversations. They just shake their head and they can't believe people are so stupid.
So stupid.
I've never experienced that before.
Yeah. And it's not just stupid, but it's also immoral. Immoral, not doing the right thing, treating other people
inappropriately,
and totally hypocritical,
right.
Blaming others for their own faults.
Correct.
Foolish, immoral, hypocritical.
Mm-hmm.
You know, ignorant and irrational. And yet, information is ubiquitous. I mean, look at this contrast between the intellect that was required to create a messenger RNA vaccine and the stupidity of saying it's the mark of the beast. You take it and your government is giving it to you to manipulate you. And just think of the dichotomy between those positions.
That's that's very good.
We have enough information available to create a messenger RNA vaccine, and yet far more people are so stupid that they think that it's the government trying to manipulate them. Just the Nimrod that we had there, blaming Bill Gates for the conspiratorial types just hate Bill Gates. They're just convinced that Bill Gates is spending his fortune trying to kill people or manipulate them. They say, well, what do you, you can't refute that, you know, Bill Gates did this, that. And you just want to shake your head and say, God, get away from all of this stuff. I mean, it's so circular reasoning. They're all just hyping themselves up. I have long said that yada is a relational sense of knowing. It means to know in a relational sense. Just like you know, Adam came to know Chawa and they conceived, well, here it is again. And Cain became acquainted with yada, came to know, becoming more aware of his wife, his woman, and she conceived and gave birth to Chanukah. Chanukah means to inaugurate and dedicate, to train, and to be merciful. Chanukah is transliterated Enoch. I don't know how you get Enoch from...
Who knows?
Chanukah, I mean...
Anything is not something that Yahweh said.
Right. They only really have one letter in common, the nun. The CH is replaced with an E. The nun is there. The O is there, but it's not based on the wa, as it is.
Oh, in Chanukah. No, not the wa.
And then it ends with a CH, the K, when it's written with a K.
And it's a K, yeah.
What is it that just say you just can't transliterate it the way it's written and then try to understand what the name means? I don't get it. Then it came to pass that he built a town. Well, how did he build a town if Cain and, first of all, where'd Cain find his wife? And second, how they build a town based upon one kid, unless there were a whole lot of other people out there. Then it came to be that he built a town. He called the name of the town after the name of his son, Chanukah. Okay. Chanukah walked with God 365 years. Chanukah walked with God, and he was not, for God took him. Boy, there's a whole lot of things that are claimed of Chanukah, Enoch. The Christians would have him being the second witness because, you know, it says for every person is appointed for
him
to die. He was just taken. So the other one that was just taken was Elia. Well, so those are the two witnesses. No, they're not.
Yeah, what kind of witness could Chanukah be?
Yeah, Elia is. I mean, Elia, he's got game.
God's going to be really snarky at the end. He's going to be mocking people. He's really snarky. And, I mean, Elia is the poster child for snarky. I mean, when you go tell a bunch of priests that, hey, I'll take a time out here. I know your God's been taking a crap. And, you know, until he finishes his business, we'll just wait here for you. Yeah, we'll wait for you. I mean,
good luck.
Dude, sarcasm. He's got game. I can see why God would choose Elia, of all people, to speak to his people. And before he got all worn out, Yahweh says, I'm just going to take you now. I'll bring you back later. We need some love in the end. You kind of bleak. And then the other one is not named. But it's pretty obvious. The other one's experience has to be. Yeah, just like Moshe was chosen by
everything
Yahweh.
Since.
He understood all the garbage that was taking place in Egypt. So God didn't have to explain it to him. He could go right to Pharaoh and be disgusted with what Pharaoh represented. So it's perfect. So this other dude, he's going to understand socialist secular humanism and Islam and Christianity, and that's going to be his target. He's going to be really snarky too. Chances are he's going to have a bit of an attitude and not like those things very much. So, but it's not Enoch. You know, Enoch's got no game. Enoch got. I mean,
what's he
I am certain that Yahweh found Enoch charming, but Enoch got no experience.
No.
So it isn't going to be Enoch. God uses people with experience who are in the game.
Already know. You got to already know.
You got to already know. That is not Enoch's deal. At this point, Yahweh presents Cain's lineage from a prophetic perspective. The most important descendant is Tubal Cain, the forger of implements of bronze and iron. Now, I say this because Gog, who is the leader of the Islamic Magog Federation, is predicted to attack Israel between 2027 and 2029 during the time of Jacob's troubles. He is a religious, political, and or military leader from Meshach and Tubal. Meshach can be fairly easily traced to the region of eastern Turkey, but without this tip, Tubal would have been more difficult to locate. Now, also, Noah's Ark, same region, can be found right here in eastern Turkey, east of Eden on the mountains of Ararat. Ararat is a much taller and newer volcanic mountain, but the mountains of Ararat, where the Ark is about 6,300 feet MSL. It's even interesting that the rivets for the glue lamps that were used to construct the Ark show signs of iron, magnesium, sodium, and titanium, which makes this name, to forge implements of metals particularly interesting. It's important just to know where all of this was taking place, and that there's even softer metals were found in the ballast of the ship, and a lot of it is consistent with the residue of metal production. By the way, since I mentioned Elia here, we just finished Passover, and I know I mentioned it last week, and it's it's just so fascinating when we find an affirmation. Now, Revelation we have to be very suspect of, but since much of Revelation is based upon Daniel and Yirmiyah and Yashiyah and Zechariah and Malachi and Ezekiel, since so much of it is citations from those books, we can go back and validate all of that.
And some of it is just an extrapolation from bringing those prophecies together. That's how you understand. You look at all the places where something is referenced at the same period of time, and you can make reasonable connections. And there's a lot of that in Revelation. And one of them talks about the two witnesses. Well, the two witnesses are mentioned in Zechariah, and Eliyahu is clearly one of them, and it talks about the attitude and the appearance of these fellows. Well, one of the things that's really interesting in Revelation, it tells us that there will be 1,260 days. That there are going to be firebrands with this message of Yahweh. And then finally, they will be killed, and they'll be out, 3.5 days before they rise up to heaven. And the natural timing of all of this would be that their ascension would occur on Yom Kippurim, the day of reconciliation, when Dode comes back, because they're literally going to be troubadours for Dode. They're going to be saying, Dode is coming back. You really ought to get your act together. A voice calls out in the wilderness, if you will, and come to embrace what Dode has to say and his offering on behalf of God. Otherwise, you're going to be his enemy, and you don't want to be that man's enemy. He's really good at what he does. And what's so interesting about this is that if you subtract in the year 2033, year 6,000, 1,264 days from the celebration of Yom Kippurim, which is on October 2nd in 2033, in that year and in that year only, 2033, which is year 6,000, and you go back 1,264 days, you have him arriving in the afternoon of Passover. And it's just a half a day. Wow. So he's arriving in the afternoon, right before sunset, of Passover in 2027. Isn't that, it's just...
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And what's so cool about that is that the rabbis have everything wrong on Passover. I mean, you got everything on the Passover plate except the except lamb. As a matter of fact, what's really interesting about the Passover plate, when you study it, what you have is Cain's offering and not Hebel's offering. It's got every kind of fruit and vegetable that you can imagine and no lamb. So the Passover plate of rabbinic Judaism is Cain's offering as opposed to Hebel's. Now, I don't know how that's supposed to endear any loyalty to God. But at the Passover Seder, the rabbis always set a place for Eliyahu. Of all people, they set a place for Eliyahu, and all of them
tear him apart.
And crying out loud in 2027, it's Eliyahu that's coming back for Passover. Hopefully.
Wow.
Hopefully,
cool.
Just the snarkiness of that will awaken some Yehudim, some Israelites, who say, wait a minute.
Eliyahu?
Passover? Okay. There's something going on here that I need to be paying attention to. Pretty cool.
Wow. Yeah, I guess.
So, we'll, I think Kirk picked this up next week. We've gone way beyond our normal breakfast time, but I became quite frustrated with what I was reading after we have gone out of our way, and then I'm reading how disappointed this person is and me for selling out to the conspiratorial nature of the horrible nature of Big Pharma and how. There a Bill Gates plot on the world, and I just go, oh God! So I said,
everybody in my neighborhood getting the shots now, and I rushed to get them. So
is there to protect us, but he's there to protect us while we're engaged doing his work. He is not there to protect us from being stupid. You know, if I say, well, God's there to protect me, so I'm going to take the nail gun that my carpenter was using and shoot it between my eyes and put God to death.
No.
You know, I'm going to jump off a two-story balcony and just prove that
Malak well, will catch me.
No.
Then you prove you don't have an Nesama.
Yeah, I mean, if you're free to test God, but test him in the right way. Challenge his words.
Yeah. Yeah.
Go translate
yeah.
the thing that you think is the most unbecoming, the least appropriate, you know, and go find something you don't agree with and go translate it and see if you've got a bone to pick with God. Do it that way.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Don't jump out of the airplane and say, well, I don't need a parachute because God's promised to protect me. Well, he didn't promise to protect you from your own stupidity.
No.
And he wants to work with you because you're not stupid. So,
so damn stupid.
So.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I just got passed a note. If Eden is equated to Jerusalem, and east of Eden equals Iraq, Iran, Iraq, and then Irad, which is Arabicized, fugitive, wild-ass heap of an empire, ultimately becoming Babylon and the confusion that is derived by intermixing, which is the basis of Rabbinic Judaism. It's just an amalgamation of all sorts of lies, some Greek, some Roman. So many Babylonians. There's an intellectual program that saw the other day that was demonstrating how much of the Babylonian culture was amalgamated into the Talmud. And it's just frightening. Oh, there are so many parts of the Talmud that are Hammurabi's laws and Babylonian edicts. Well, even, you know, Rosh Hashanah replacing Teruah.
Babylonian
yeah,
New
you know,
year.
Here you are in the seventh That's month of the year and you're celebrating the Babylonian New Year.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, folks. So a lot of Babylon in it. I was just writing a chapter just a moment ago and was talking about that, you know, Christians have replaced, you know, Pesach, Matzah, and Bikurim and Shavuot with their religious holidays. You know, even in Yom Kippurim and Sukkah with holidays like Christmas replaces Sukkah and Good Friday replaces Passover and Easter Sunday replaces Bikurim, and then the birth of their church at Pentecost replaces Shavuot, and then of course they've got a few others just to throw in just for to irritate God, like All Hallows Eve and the Assumption of Mary and things of this nature. But I also looked at Judaism. You know, Passover, they celebrate it by replicating Cain's offering. Really swift maneuver there, dudes. On things like matzah, they celebrate it historically as if it was a day of freedom, but they don't know what it was freedom from. Matzah is about un-yeasting, taking the fungus of the religion and the politics of Mitzrayim, the crucible of human oppression, out of us, so that we could be cleansed and adopted into God's family. They haven't got a clue. They didn't even bother to celebrate Bikurim, and they celebrate Purim instead. And then they have no interest whatsoever in Shavuot anymore. They changed Teruah to the Babylonian Rosh Hashanah. And then on the day that was established especially for them, Yom Kippurim is all about Yahweh reconciling his relationship with Yisrael and Yehudah. They turn a reconciliation into a day to afflict and debase one's soul. And, and then they add a festival like Hanukkah. God doesn't mention Hanukkah for him. I mean, these are national holidays, and in Israel, neither one have anything to do with it. In Hanukkah, you're dealing with the Maccabean period where you've got two rival factions vying for power, and the ones that prevail were the ones that adopted Greek influences. And their big miracle is that a oil lamp that they thought would burn for 4 or 5 days burn for 9 days, and oh boy, ain't that a miracle? That's my miracle from God.
Yeah, what about defeating the Egyptians and freeing you
from
religious and political oppression?
Yeah, and drowning the army when it came to get you.
Yeah.
What do you want? What do you want?
What do you want? Yeah. What do you want? So anyway, we'll be back with you next week. Hopefully we'll have a little less of a conspiratorial argument next week. And
You got to clear the air sometime, pal.
We do. And I am having endured the, which was my fault because I brought him into to this show and had him as a co-host for a while until he just became so absurdly conspiratorial that he gagged me. And then I heard how abusive he was to people. But once I learned from Yahweh just how opposed he is to conspiracies, he says, don't promote them, don't listen to them. You can condemn them if you want, but you just do not engage in conspiracies. And what I learned is that they are the great credibility cesspool of humanity, and that today it's the fastest growing, most debilitating of all religions. And just like every other religion, evidence and reason means nothing to these dunderheads. The more that you prove that they're nincompoops, the more aggressive they become.
Well, the more you believe there was an awful lot of Cain's buddies still around.
Yeah, it's I would say to them the same thing that Yahweh said to Pharaoh: let my people go, release them, just let them go.
Yeah.
And you just you go away, be as miserable as you want to be, but do so on your own. Don't do so with my people. All right. Well, we'll be with you next week. Look forward to it, and happy completion of the most wonderful week of the year of Pesach, Matzah, Purim. May God bless. Good night.
Yes, sir. Shalom.